I'm not Rusty, the senior pastor. I am Becky, the senior pastor's wife. I know you're surprised to see me. I'm just as surprised as you are. So Tuesday afternoon, Rusty comes home from work, and he is just a complete train wreck. And he just down in his cave. And so Thursday afternoon, I've seen him only to get drugs. And so realizing the weekend is coming, and normally by now his message is, you know, I know what stage it's at, and he hasn't moved. So God had been kind of stirring some weird thoughts around for me, and I was like, really? But so I contacted Dave Schleyer, and I said, I don't know, maybe this is just, I don't know what you're thinking, but, you know, maybe God might want me to speak this weekend, because Rusty's not. And so he said, well, good, you know, check with him when he comes to. Rusty came to, and I said, here's what I'm thinking. And he opens his eyes, and he goes, so here I am. That was all the discussion that needed to take place. And that was like 2 days ago. So the last 2 days have been an interesting journey for me, for sure. What I want to share with you this morning is about Jesus meeting us in our suffering and us coming alongside each other to help carry that weight. Some of you today are really struggling with things, and you don't know if God is even there or in the picture at all or aware. And I hope as you listen today that you can hear and see God's heart for you in what I have to share and in my stories. 9 weeks ago, I went to help my 93-year-old mother move from independent living to assisted living on her campus. And day two, I catapulted myself into the air in the parking lot where the old people were supposed to be doing that, and fell, broke these three fingers hard, badly. When I got up, my pinky was at like a right angle to my hand. So this also catapulted me into a whole new world of hand land, of fingers and hands, and who knew all of this? Crazy stuff. My sister-in-law, who was there helping with the move, navigated me through the next hours and then the next 3 days with such kindness and strength, and I appreciated it so much. Interestingly, her niece is a nurse practitioner in Richmond for the top hand surgeon in the area at Inova. And so, you know, that was amazing. She, you know, worked lots of things out for us. So I guess 3 days later, I was having surgery there. They put in four pins through my knuckles that came to the outside, so just bear with me. And I had those for 5 weeks. And I will just own, it was definitely 5 weeks of misery. And the weeks since then, I would call grueling, because I've moved into physical therapy or occupational therapy. And that's crazy stuff. So with all journeys, you know, you need to try to find some fun stuff, which Rusty and I are pretty good at doing. So I wanted to show you some things from hand land, which is like a whole language there and everything. You know, I'm learning all kind of stuff. So here's one thing that I want to show you. Anybody got any idea what this is from hand land? It does look like cheese, and it looks like SpongeBob. That's what I thought. I really wanted to make some like little legs to have hang down, but I definitely didn't have the energy or desire to do that. But anyway, so what this is what they gave me. So for 2 weeks, how did I do this? I slept in this with this, and you put your, and so I had my hand in a splint, and it was up like this, and I would, to keep the swelling down and to keep it protected at night. So that's what this is. Isn't this amazing? This is amazing. You have to like stick your hand in and move it around. It's crazy. Also, they seemed to enjoy making all kinds of, they had like a splint bar, which I, that's hilarious, okay? Like nachos and the soda and, yeah. But they made these splints. This was my favorite one. I've had a number of them as things have changed. They found out I was had been a preschool teacher, and so they made me, this was a fun OT, and she made a little eyes on this one. And so I thought that was super fun. And one of my little friends came over, and I had it on, and I showed him, and he kind of like backed away. And he says, is he kind? Like that. So cute. Also, another fun thing is when I was in OT this week, she got out a snake bite kit. I kid you not, a real snake bite kit, and used that to try to like put space between the layers in my tendons, because actually my tendons are not moving, and my bones healed, but the tendons are not moving. So it's like grueling. Okay. So anyway, I'm through with all that. I promise. So in a moment, my path changed. I was going this direction with life, and all of a sudden my journey changed, and I'm on another path, and I'm on a path of suffering. And I guess I was surprised, but not shocked. At 63, I've at least learned this, that it is expected. We live in a fallen, sinful world, and we just need to not be caught off guard by the fact that there's pain, you know, and suffering, and this is part of life. I mean, I always think it's kind of funny when we think we're entitled to not have that, but like Jesus' own mother, when you look at, you know, if he didn't make it easy for her, from the moment she found out she was conceiving him till she watched him die on the cross, why do we think we're entitled to a cushy life? I John 16:33, I think it's actually a little bit of a funny verse. Jesus says, these things I've spoken to you so that in me you might have peace. So I think, you know, you're like, okay, good, this is gonna be good. And then he says, in this world you will have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. To me, there is some peace in knowing that I'll have tribulation just because it's settled, okay? And so that's good. So then I had my surgery, then I went home and I was surrounded with all sorts of kindness and care and people meeting needs and bringing food and shopping. And I think my favorite part of that that part was that I had a lot of different people wash my hair in the kitchen sink. And so I do want to show you that my son Joseph won the prize for this. And there he is. My son Joseph is not a hairdresser. He is a grad student in counseling. And but he won the prize because he wrote a song while he was washing my hair and sang it to me while he was doing that, and conducted a post-event interview afterwards, which I have on tape. I mean, it is hilarious. I wish I could take 6 minutes and show you, but I won't do that. Some journeys, suffering comes and for a while, and then it's done. Like Rusty is suffering. Hopefully this flu will be over in a few days. And hi, honey. but some journeys come and stay. And some stay for a lifetime. Certainly physical pain, but also relational stuff, especially relational stuff, marriage stuff, our kids, our parents, finances, jobs, addictions. People, you know, struggle with it. It's a long journey, day to day. Loss from death, shame from the past. In this kind of journey, we are called to, in Galatians 6, to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. To literally, physically sort of come up under and help someone bear a load that they need help carrying. A big part of that is empathy, like bearing the emotional weight, weeping with those that weep. I mean, I think, you know, Jesus at the tomb of his friend Lazarus, who he was going to raise from the dead, it did not keep him from being moved by the pain of the people around him. And he mingled his tears with theirs. And that's amazing. That calls us, that sets the bar. There's a very popular research professor right now named Brené Brown. She's at University of Houston, and she's done a lot of work on empathy. And like her podcasts and stuff are actually pretty funny and dead on. And one thing she says in talking about empathy, she said, to move towards somebody with this sentence, who needs support, but you should be grateful because, and you know, then you fill in the blank, you know, or because at least you don't have such and such, or at least you do have such and such. So that would play out like in a miscarriage, somebody that's suffering from a miscarriage. Well, at least you already have a kid. But if they don't, well, then at least you can try again. But if they can't, well, at least you weren't that far along. And, you know, and it goes on and on. And it's supremely unhelpful. It just doesn't touch anything. It kind of keeps you from protected from really actually moving into their heart and their pain. And I'm not saying it's never okay. I had somebody come up last night and they said, oh, I think I said at least. And I was like, it's okay. You know, it's okay that you said that to me. I think it just doesn't, typically that mentality doesn't get near where people are. This guy, Ted Hetherington, who wrote this poem that he's in ministry in Vancouver, and he wrote this poem that we use here in the LCI, the Lay Counseling Ministry that we've started here at New Hope. And I just think this is so profound, and I'd like to share it with you. It kind of shows two sides of, well, you'll see. It's called Today We Talked. Today we talked. I said, I'm confused, and you asked about my devotions. I said, I get angry, and you quoted me a Bible verse. I said, I hurt, and you said, believe. I said, I'm depressed, and you said, rejoice. You said I could call, and I said I would try. You said you would pray. I suppressed my doubts. You said things would get better. I wondered when. And as we parted, you waved with a smile. Today we talked, neither of us listened, and though we talked, there was a silence, and nobody said, I care. Now watch the shift. Today we talked. I said, I'm confused, and you asked, about what? I said, I get angry, and you asked, when? I said, I hurt, and you asked, why? I said, I'm depressed, and you said, I care. You said you would call, and I said, please do. You said you would pray, and I knew you would. You said things will get better, and I tried to believe. You said there is hope, and you wrapped it in a hug. Today we talked. You listened for both of us. And as we talked, there was a third voice, and he said, I care with your lips. Empathy moves us toward a person. It sits with their pain. It is a witness to their suffering. I have a dear friend from a lot of years who is just a beautiful soul. And she just lives her life so honestly and courageously and vulnerably. And she is way too young to be dealing with a husband that has Alzheimer's. And he is pretty much completely gone. And she's trying to care for him at home. 2 weeks ago, he got physically violent with her. She had to call the cops. She had to have him taken to the hospital. And now he is there, declining, and she's left with trying to figure out what to do. You know, what can I say to her? You know, offer her some tips, some positive thinking. Her situation is so painful. But what I can and do offer her in our relationship that is reciprocal is my compassion. I don't try to reframe for her. I give her a chance to vent, to say whatever she wants. I mingle my tears with hers. I'm a witness to her life and her pain. And I share her sadness. And I'm not even with her. Somehow we manage to do this by text and over the phone. And that can happen. I just think it transcends. I think empathy can even transcend the distance. When I got the pens out of my hands, and my OT gave me a paper with a picture of what my hand needed to be moving towards. And so it was like, you know, okay, here, here, fist, you know, and all. So my hand recently moving, you know, I started to try to do those positions. And pretty much then and now, this was it. I was in shock. I looked at my hand and I felt like it didn't even belong to me. And I felt like it didn't even look like a hand. It looked like a purple baseball mitt. It was so swollen. And it was just weird. And I just felt like I need somebody to be a witness to this for me. And I thought about my daughter. And so she came over and I said, can I show you something? And I got out my paper and I said, sweetie, this is what I'm supposed to be able to do. Can I show you what I can do? And I showed her. And it was almost like a holy moment for me. It just felt set apart. Because she just stepped into that with such beauty. And she just matched her sort of heart to mine. Like, she didn't try to come in like with a joke to cheer me up. Sometimes that's fine. I need that too. But she just... she's kind of like sensed where I was, and she just matched it. And she just said, as she has had said so many times in the last 9 weeks, Mom, I'm so sorry. And you know what? That matters. It does matter to say, I'm just sorry. Sometimes that's the best you can do, but it's good. And then she also put words to what she saw. She said, you know, Mom, it's so weird when you try to tell your body to do something and it just won't do it. And that was really comforting to me that she put words to how I felt, because I hadn't quite found that yet. It was a really tender time for me. And when she left, I felt hope. And I had not felt that before. I felt hope, I felt believed, I felt understood, and I felt relief. There's an astounding Bible story of Jesus and this whole idea of inviting somebody into your suffering. And the astounding part is it's Jesus that's doing the inviting. In Mark 14, 32 through 42, Jesus is preparing to die, and he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he invites his disciples. He says, come here while I pray. And then he took Peter, James, and John, who were his guys, along with him. And it says, he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death, he told them. And he is just suffering. And he says, stay here and keep watch. What's astounding to me is this is Jesus. And he's, you know, and somehow what he needs and wants is his guys to come be with him in his sorrow and know what he's going through. And if Jesus feels like that, if he models this for us this way, do you not think we need this? If the God of the universe needs this, do we not? And then, of course, you know, not astounding is that the disciples mess up pretty badly, fall asleep, are not there for him. He's like, come be there for me. They are not there for him. They fall asleep. And that repeats itself three times. They absolutely don't come through for him, but he does not write them off. How many times, if you ask somebody to be there for you, and then it just flat out weren't there for you, would you go back and ask again? We don't risk like Jesus does. And would you ask again like he did? I mean, the example that he gives of relational risk is just so profound. He does not move them to another category, you know, and is done with them. He sets this example of just grace and love that's just amazing to me. And then later on, redemption, because these are the guys that start the whole church, and they're the whole, you know, reason we're here. Redemption. In empathy, when we bear one another's burdens, sometimes we do that well. We carry each other's burdens well. We can step in and do that, and it's such a blessing to us and to them. Sometimes, for a number of reasons, legitimate or otherwise, we can't or won't bear each other's burdens well and empathize well. Sometimes that's because we've got our own stuff going on. Sometimes it's because many things, many needs are converging at once. Sometimes in my small group life, I mean, everybody's falling apart at the same time. It's life, you know? And it's a mess, and we got to figure out, how do we do this? Sometimes we just sleep through our friends' needs, you know, just like the disciples. And then sometimes, especially some of us, decide we're going to be, you know, we're going to be Jesus, and we're going to fill every gap and hole in their life, and we're just there, and we're just there meeting needs, and it's a codependent nightmare, because we are not designed for that. I hear my codependents laughing. I love that. You go, girl. we're not designed for that. Jesus is Jesus. He is it. He has to be at our core. I woke up one day last week, and life has gone on at home, and so now this is kind of, you know, better. At least I'm not in constant pain, and except when I'm at PT or exercising. And so life has moved on. Lots of other things are going on. Things are on the front burner. But every morning I wake up, my first thought is about my hand and my journey and what's going to happen. And will I get my tendons back? And will I ever have a fist again? And what I love, I had this thought since, you know, right now, and this is nobody's fault. This is life. Nobody's thinking about me right now, you know, and that's fine. But I had this thought. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. Listen, they are new every morning. Every morning, great is your faithfulness. So in my chronic suffering right now, there is chronic mercy for me, new every morning in Jesus. And there's such hope in that. That's where I camp out. I love it when other people can come through, but in the end, it's me and Jesus. Last week, Rusty did such a great message. I really do love to hear him speak, and I'm not making that up. Hi, honey. And I wanted to go back to it because it resonated with me and sort of my own story and something I wanted to share in this. So Luke 8:40-48. On the other side of the lake, the crowds welcomed Jesus because they had been waiting for him. Then a man named Jairus, a leader of the local synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come home with them. His only daughter, who was 12 years old, was dying. And I sort of love the picture Rusty painted of this man, this strong leader, just falling at the, just like almost groveling at the feet of Jesus. He is desperate. He will do whatever it takes to get his daughter to Jesus. He's like Liam Neeson in Taken. He's just whatever it takes. And I love that. I love that picture. That's a father's heart. That's a true father's heart. So as Jesus went with him, he was surrounded by the crowds. And a woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding, and she could find no cure. That is a long time to suffer with anything. And I think in that time and place, I'm sure this was part of her identity. She was known for this. I'm sure she felt ashamed. I'm sure she wishes she had another story. I'm sure, you know, she was aware that people would see her and speak to that. She probably had people around her that would say, well, at least you don't have leprosy. You know, I'm sure there were plenty of, you know, ways that she had experienced life. And possibly compassion, too. We don't know that. But anyway, with constantly could find no cure. Coming up behind Jesus, she touched the fringe of his robe. Immediately, the bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. And so in that moment, Jesus made it public. She was trying to make it hidden and private. He made it public. And when I, you know, at one point when I was reading the story, I was thinking, God, why would you do that? Why would you make it public for her? She's already so, you know, she feels so exposed anyway. And as we read on, I want you to look at, you know, why I think he did that. Who touched me? Jesus asked. Everyone denied it. And Peter said, Master, this whole crowd is pressing up against you. But Jesus said, someone deliberately touched me, for I felt healing power go out from me. And when the woman realized she could not stay hidden, she began to tremble and she fell to her knees before him. The whole crowd, then she had to speak in front of the crowd. God bless her heart. The whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and that she had been immediately healed. And in the next words that Jesus says, I see why he made this public. The first thing he says to her is he calls her daughter. There in front of everybody, this is my girl. I'm her father. And, you know, I sort of flash back to the beginning where that father is, you know, pleading for the life of his daughter. Here's this woman, apparently alone. We don't know. I don't know where her father was. But Jesus says, daughter. And I think he pretty much had her a daughter. He probably didn't need to say anything else. If that doesn't, like, stir in you as a man or a woman, the thought of Jesus saying to you, son, daughter, what I think is it would be worth doing some work on that. Find some people of empathy and tell your stories. Some of you have had fathers that were not good. And you need to get to the place where you can hear Jesus say to you, son, and something inside of you connects. And then he said to her, your faith has made you well. I love it. I mean, he healed her, but he honored her in front of that whole crowd. He honored her for her faith. That's so sweet. That's so kind. That's what a father would do. I love that. And then he said, go in peace. When I went in for my first appointment after I had my pins in, my visit, I was just super afraid and weak and vulnerable. And so my OT started working on my hand and I just busted out crying. And then I didn't just cry, you know, for a minute. I cried for 30 minutes while she worked my hand, moved my fingers, did things that I didn't really think that they needed to be doing. And I didn't look at her, so I don't know what she thought of me, although I didn't feel like she shamed me or in any way vocally communicated that I was weak. But by the time I got home, I was in this place of just shame. That I was in, And it's interesting because I've already done this work. I cry anytime, anywhere. I mean, I'm free. Oh my gosh. But my old messages that were, my old messages are, you are way too much. You are too much of everything. You are too much sensitivity. You are too much tears. You are too much words. And, but Jesus says no. And I had to, I'm there, I'm vulnerable, I'm too much, I'm ashamed. And Jesus called me back. And he called me daughter. And he said, look, between him and Rusty, you've broken three fingers badly. You've been through the trauma of a fall and surgery. And, you know, it is, you are not weak. It is okay. So I went back in there, my head held high, definitely didn't need to apologize for my tears. I think also Jesus just said, I'm honoring your faith journey, Becky. You know, you're doing the best you can in this. You are trying to trust me. We are walking through this together. So I think just like the woman in the story, he calls me daughter. He says, I honor your faith. Go in peace. I did go to PT in peace. It's sort of my cheers now, you know? I mean, I am at peace. I don't know if I'm gonna get a fist again. They told me last week I might get to have surgery again. So, you know, there's that. And I don't know on the other side of that. I'm not, you know, I don't even know. But I really don't care. I really am at peace with whatever he has for me in this journey. And so what I want to say is, what is your journey of suffering? Do you know it? Have you owned it? And where is Jesus in that for you? Do you know that you are not designed to carry what you're carrying alone? Do you know that? Because God created the church and he says, bear each other's burdens. You are not designed to carry that alone. Will you risk asking for help? There are lots of places, even here at New Hope. There's groups, there's CR, there, you know, I love even all the things we try to do specifically. I know there's an infertility meeting coming up. I know we have special needs, you know, kids groups and stuff. Will you risk and own and ask? It won't be perfect. People won't come through for you perfectly, but there's a lot there. There's a lot for you. There's a lot for them. What about empathy? Do you have empathy? Could you risk to try it? Could you risk to do it better? Like take it to the next level? I mean, there is a cost in doing it, but there's also just huge benefits of just connection and mercy and love. I got an email from a guy last night. He says, He says, I'm not empathetic. Everybody in my family knows. But he said, I'm challenged. I hear you. I want to try. I love that. I love that guy, that he did that, that he said that, that he told me. You have an important role to play in the lives of people around you. They need you. And you need them. So let's be courageous and let's love well. Let's pray. Father, thanks for this opportunity, this crazy opportunity. And I really pray that your word would speak, and whatever needs to settle in our hearts and then stir in our hearts, I pray that that would happen in Jesus' name. Amen.